Can everyone hear me out there? Doing a little mic check here. As General said, my name is Technical Sergeant Israel Del Toro, Jr. I go by TT. It's the name I was given to when I joined the Air Force. My buddy just said, man, Israel Del Toro is too long. Let's just call you DT for short. So that's how I got DT. Just give you a little background on who I am. Born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Hardcore Bear fans, hardcore White Sox fans. So for you guys, sorry. You know. When I was younger, I lost both my parents by the age of 12. So I raised my brothers and sisters, and my grandparents raised me. From there, you know, I went to school, you know, I graduated high school, went to University of Illinois. My first year, my grandfather had a stroke. Happily, I was there to catch him when he actually fell in the bathtub. I was just there on vacation, or a weekend. And I was about to drop, I was going to drop out, but my grandma told me, don't drop out. So I didn't. I continued on to my sophomore year. My grandma gets diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, when my dad passed away, I was the last one to talk to him. So the last thing he ever told him was, oh, promise me you always take care of your family. So that has always stuck with me. So, you know, once my grandma went down, when she got diagnosed, I was like, I'm getting out of school. I got to help her take care of my one brother and two sisters. They were all teenagers. So imagine grandparents raising teenagers at that time. So I was the law at that time. I took care of them. By the time they were old enough, I was like, I was just sitting in my living room. People ask me, DT, was there something inspirational, something magnificent that made you choose the Air Force? I was like, nah. I was just sitting in my living room watching TV, and I saw a commercial. I said, yeah, why not? And that, and a lot of my friends told me that's where all the good-looking girls were at in the Air Force. So, you know, and then help, and it also helped that my recruiter was kind of cute. So, you know, I would assign anything that she told me. So, that's my story, how I joined the Air Force. So, nothing magnificent. From there, my job, I was originally going to be a PJ. I always wanted to do something. My dad loved old war movies, so did my grandpa. You know, they loved Rambo. I was like, man, I want to do something like that. So I was going to be a PJ. And then in tech school, the recruiter of the tech P's came by and told me, dude, you can drop bombs, you can jump, you tell generals what to do. And then girls love tech P's. I'm like, oh, dude. You know, young 22-year-old full of hormones. I was like, I'm all over that. So I switched. From there, I went to my tech school, which is at Herbert Field. Great time, you know. Of course, I was one of the few that was 22, so I was able to enjoy Fort Walton Beach a little bit better than the other guys. Yeah, didn't get caught, thank God. But from there, I continued on. After I graduated, I went straight to jump school. You had a trial for that. You know, out of my class, there's only 3 slots, so you had to do extra things like extra runs, be quicker on the runs, be quicker on navigations. And, you know, tech P's are expert map readers. And you're talking to a city boy that lived in Chicago, never been to any forest. And his first nightmare, they tell you, there's bears out there, there are wolves, snakes, tigers. And it's at night, and you're like, oh, crap. So, you know, I get my compass. It's at night. And now I like, get my little azimuth, and I hit straight. I don't stop for anything. All I have is a little knife on me. I was like, something comes out, I'm just going to stab and run. That's it. Thank God I made it through. I was like, oh, thank God. But, you know, I graduated, went to, you know, I got to go to airborne school. That was pretty fun. Went there with my best friend at the time. We went through basic and tech school together. And we went, you know, we've been together since then. Graduated that. Then I went to Fairchild. Did a survival school up there. It was pretty fun. I had we had a real small class. Usually they say it's like 15 per element. You know, we only had 5, and one was this you know, crusty old reservist major. I swear he was like 100 years old. And I'm like, sir, what are you doing here? I was like, what do you do? I'm a chaplain. And I was like, then why do you got you in here? She's like, I don't know. I must have made somebody mad. Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, chaplain got hurt. So then I became the leader. And a lot of the instructors knew what TACPs did. So I had this one troop that was, you know, he was a life support guide. He, you know, grew up in Chicago. You know, if you're walking on snow, you don't put all your weight on the snow because you're just going to fall right through. This guy didn't know how to do that. So he just stepped through and tumbled, you know, and got up and cursed every single word you can imagine. So I talked to him. I was like, dude, just relax. We'll make it through. But the good thing about it, you know, we were so small elements. We had two rabbits. You know, you got to skin them and eat them. Well, tech peas were kind of, we're not right in the head. You know, I skinned my rabbit, and I stuck my fingers in its ear holes and made it like a little puppet. And they're like, dude, what's wrong with you? I was like, we're in the forest. We're bored. You know, got to be entertained. Well, you know, that was one of, you know, I had a good time. Then, of course, you get captured, you know, they did the whole POW thing, and they stuck me in a box. I'm like, sweet, I'm sleeping. You know, I hadn't slept in a while. I'm just, there's other guys screaming. I was like, what's this guy yelling about, man? You should get comfortable and sleep. And then, of course, they'll, like, they'll interrogate you. They're like, all right, tell me what you know, or, you know, you'll have females in your element, and they'll, you know, they'll call them wenches. You know, that's their word in the PLWs. It's like, if you don't tell me we're going to beat the wenches, I'm like, go ahead. They knew what they were getting into. I was like, go ahead, beat them. And no skin off my back. But, you know, I made a lot of good friends. You know, of course, they tell you don't show up with any of your TACP gear, any coins or anything. Well, one of my dumb friends, he has his coin on and his TACP shirt on. And me and my best friend, Jeff, are right next to him. And all of a sudden we hear ding, 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 his coin fall out. They're like, oh, TACP, where else? Who else is TACP here? And my buddy sells us out. It's like these two right next to me. I'm like, dude. You know, graduated, got to my first assignment, which was the Pope Air Force Base. A lot of people call it No Hope Pope. I was there, but I was mostly assigned with the Army guys up at Fort Bragg, right next to it. You know, Pope now is going to become like, you know, Army, you know, Pope Army Airfield, so because of Bragg. But I was there for 6 years. In those 6 years, I became jump master qualified. Got a lot of my jumps there. Went to aerosol school, and I went to another survival school there for the special forces, for the Army guys. And it was nothing like Fairchild. They make you sign a waiver, because by the end of the end of your little tour, your jaw's just hurting because they just beat the hell out of you. You're like, oh, dude. It's like, I just said I wanted more milk, and you beat me for that? But, you know, I made it through. That was a pretty cool time. And from there, you know, I always wanted to push myself. I wanted to do something, you know. Become a JTAC usually takes about 3 years. And I always pushed myself because I wanted to be able to control aircraft. You know, I wanted to, you know, I always was had to be the helper for the JTAC. You know, I always had to watch them drop the bombs, and I wanted to be the guy to actually drop them. So I pushed myself. I competed in competitions. TACPs, we used to have a worldwide competition called Lightning Challenge, where TACPs from all the world compete in teams and get together at Fort Walton Beach and compete for the, you know, best team out there. And I did it as a A1C, and so did my partner. And we made it through it. We got through the regional. We won a couple awards. And we got to, you know, the up to the main thing up at Lightning Challenge. And at Senior Airmen, we won sixth place out of 46 teams. So that kind of propelled me to get pushed in front of other guys that were there longer than me. So I became a JTAC in 2000. 2000, that's when I got sent off to my first deployment, which was Bosnia. Bosnia was really more of a getaway, you know. All we did was work out and, you know, have fun. That's really play volleyball. So You know, I still had a mission though. You know, there's an SF team out there, so I would go out with them, you know, outside of Tuzla and talk to, you know, the mayors and people out there, see what's going on. So I still had a mission, but most of the time it was just working out. That time I met a lot of good friends. Actually, one of them's here right now. She actually flew down from Philly to just hear me. She just found out what happened to me, so she was all... She saw me and nearly choked me when she was hugging me. I was like, oh, slow down, I can't breathe. Burnt skin, help. that was pretty cool. But after that, you know, I came home. That's when, later on that year, that's when 9/11 kicked off. You know, of course, I couldn't go because I just gotten back from Bosnia. So a lot of my friends went. And, of course, what do? Is all they're doing is just bragging when they come back. Dude, we dropped bombs here. We dropped bombs here. We did everything. I'm like, shut up, dude. I don't want to hear it. That's like, don't talk to me. I don't want to hear anything. I'll get my chance. And I did. My truly first chance that I credit, you know, under my belt is when Iraq kicked off. I was there in January, right before it even kicked off. I was there for 2 months, you know, living and eating with the Army there. They're at Kuwait International Airport. Our first mission was supposed to be jumping into BIOP, which, if you know what BIOP is, it was Baghdad International. Well, the intel that we got was that they had so many anti-aircraft missiles on, you know, the airport that the first, you know, five planes would have just been destroyed. Guess what plane I was in? I was number two. So I was like, dude, let's not do that. Well, Army, like, dude, we gotta jump in. We know we're airborne. I'm like, exactly. I was like, man, you're not smart, dude. So thank God, you know, that mission got scratched. You know, they actually listened to the intel, you know, which is actually just guesswork, you know, intel. You know, I think they're gonna be there. I'm not sure, but they might be there. But our next mission was we were gonna fly into Tlil. It was going to be about seven C-130s with two vehicles each and 20 men. We took off. I was in the first plane. Unfortunately, only one plane was able to land, and that was mine due to so much artillery and anti-aircraft missiles. So we got to land, so two vehicles and 20 guys. And we had to wait for the rest of the 82nd to drive up. That was pretty cool because I teased him. I was like, dude, I thought you guys jump out. You drove up to the battle. And then they don't like that a lot. But now I got a lot of good Army friends. You know, I just like to tease them a little. But, you know, that entire time, you know, it took them about 3 days to get up there. So, you know, I was the only JTAC. So it was nonstop battles. Close calls a couple times. You know, I thought we weren't going to make it. But God bless those A-10s. I love those things. You know, they came down and saved our butts many times. After that, when the rest of the chairborne, I like to tell them, because they never got airborne, so they were in their car. Chairborne drove up, you know. We had another mission. We were going to go push up north, up to Asamoa. That was our next big battle. It was about a week-long battle. The Ba'ath party members controlled the north side, and we controlled the south. It was all divided by a river. So our entire goal was to get across this river. There's one time when I actually thought we weren't going to make it. I was out with my team. We were traveling at night because we were trying to get behind the, you know, bad guys. Well, there's another company of Army guys on the other side. They thought we were the bad guys and said they're shooting at us. Well, I'm trying to get on the radio and say, hey, stop, we're friendly. So they're like, pop flares. I'm like, if we pop flares, now the enemy's going to know where we're at, and we're trying to get behind them. You know, well, unfortunately, we had to, because, you know, the Army guys just didn't believe us that we were friendlies. So I had we had to pop flares, and, well, what happens? They stop, bad guys start shooting at us. I'm like, great. So, well, we made it out there. My buddy actually had a control aircraft for that to save our butts. But my best one was I had two A-10s come in, you know, the Ba'ath Army members were using taxis to resupply and reorganize their troops. And at first we couldn't do anything, you know, hold the whole NATO, you know, respect everybody's place, you know, can't do anything, useless junk. But don't tell him I said that. But, you know, so we finally got permission. Dude, you can blow those things up. I was like, sweet. So, you know, my commander gets up and he's like, DT, get some A-10s in here and blow every taxi you see up there. I'm like, sweet. So I get on the mic, I call in, I got two A-10s, and I tell them, any vehicle you see on that road is a liable target. It's a live target. And all they do is, like, for 10 minutes straight with gun runs. And I got army guys popping up and trying to take pictures. I'm like, dude, get there. You're going to get your head blown off. But it was just the greatest sound. I was like, brr. I was like, sweet. I was like, if I had a beer, it would have been the best time. But that's where I got my bronze from those two battles. I really don't talk about non-medals. You know, that's not me. You know, I've been there, done that. You know, I don't have to talk about that. After that, we got called home because at the same time, my troop actually trained. He had been there about maybe six, seven months at our squadron. Was in Afghanistan, and he actually got killed. And he knew he was my troop, and a lot of other of us were friends with him. So they flew us back, which was like in May. And that was probably the hardest thing I ever had to do, was bury my own friend, my own troop. So you can imagine, you know, all these muscle heads, you know, trying to keep a dry eye in their blues and Arlington. You know, it was real hard. That was probably the hardest thing. After that, you know, I thought I was going to have some time, you know, just chill, relax. By that time, you know, the old ball and chain finally got me, and I got married and had a kid. So, you know, I'm just kidding. Thank God my wife ain't here, because, man, I'll be sleeping on the couch right now. But I thought I was going to have time to, you know, finally relax, you know, hang out with my wife, hang out with my kid. Well, I get ordered to Korea. I was like, oh, great. So I tell, honey, you got to go to Colorado with your sister, and I got to go to Korea for a year. So we did that. I went to Korea. That's what was my true first experience of Air Force life. Like I said, TACPs live a lot with the Army. You know, it's rarely where you see them on Air Force bases. When I got there, I was assigned to the 25th Fighter Squadron as a BALO trainer, which stands for Battalion Air Liaison Officer. Like the general said, you know, I teach them how to tactics, you know, really just talk Army. You know, so I make them get a little dumber. You know, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no. A lot of good Army friends, you know, just joking. But, and I teach them, so really, you know, TACPs really don't have dedicated officers. You know, we get them 2 years at a time, we get the BALOs. So, you know, we teach them to stick up, you know, don't let the Army guys push them around, because they see young little, you know, butter bars, you know, the top commander is going to wind up, yeah, whatever, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, we teach them to stand up for themselves. You don't let these guys push you around. Don't let your TACP troops get stuck doing kitchen duty when, you know, there's only two of us and we can't be doing that stuff. But I had a good time. You know, I got there. That was my first true experience. I don't know how many of you guys out here were ex-fighter pilots, or, but my first true naming, you know, I remember being at a bar, at the squadron bar, and then next day I'm in my room. No idea how I got there. Last thing I remember was drinking a bottle of Jack with this other pilot, and now holding up another guy up on the fridge so he wouldn't fall. And then I wake up in my room, I was like, okay, my clothes are on, no money's missing, I'm good. I was like, juicy girl didn't get me this time. But but, you know, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I had a good time. From there, I finally got my dream assignment. My dream assignment was Italy. Unfortunately, I was married, so it wasn't really a dream assignment. But, you know, it was good enough. But when I got there, my buddies tell me, dude, you're going to deploy. I was like, all right. You know, when? In 6 months. Okay, how long? 6 months. Boy, I'm totally going to be divorced. My wife's going to just kick my ass. Excuse me if I swear, I'm sorry. I apologize. So I had a plan. I was like, I know how to tell my wife and not get in trouble. So, you know, she's a big Catholic. You know, she always wanted to meet Pope John Paul. So I was like, cool, I'll take her to meet Pope John Paul. What happens? The dude dies on me. I was like, come on, God, why? Why? So my next plan is like, I'll take her to the funeral. She'll get to see the funeral. What happens? There are so many people there, they shut down Rome. No more trains. I was like, oh, I'm totally going to be divorced. So I went to my last plan. I'll take her in June. You know, show her a good time and tell her there. Because that's what I did. As we're walking through the ruins, I tell her, honey, it's like, what? I got something to tell you. Like, what? I'm deploying to Afghanistan. Yeah. She's like, what? I'm deploying to Afghanistan for 6 months, and I love you. And, of course, she couldn't say anything because I'm surrounded by people, so she didn't want to make a scene. So, and besides, we're in Rome for 5 days, so what can she say, you know? I wined her and dined her and then gave her the bad news. Yeah. At that, you know, I deployed to Afghanistan late August, early September. When I got there, I was the only JTAC, which stands for Joint Terminal Attack Controller, to support two companies, a scout team, and we had an SF team that was there that didn't have a JTAC, so they would take me if they needed me. So if you guys don't know how the Army works, when one company's out, the stays in. Well, being the only JTAC, I was out all the time. You know, all I have is, you know, 2 days to resupply, and I'm out again. So before I got hurt, I had already been out in over 30 missions, and all of them were all air assault, you know, all air assault. And you know, my whole thing was, you know, if I'm going to get deployed again, I'd rather go to Afghanistan because I know, you know, at least if I die, I'll be in a firefight. I won't get blown up in a Humvee. And what happens to me? I get blown in a Humvee. The irony of that, I was like, God, why you punish me? It wasn't bad enough you had to kill off Pope John Paul so my wife couldn't see him. But you know, I got into my missions. The mission that I got hurt on, it was just after Thanksgiving, we got the orders. They tell us, you know, we got to go just north of Kabul in the mountains. The Taliban's using this route as a main supply route. And there's a high-value target, a high-value Taliban leader. So our mission was to go out to destroy the supply route and try and capture and kill this Taliban leader. So we get out there. We get air assaulted in. We have, you know, they drop Humvees for us and motorcycles. And the first couple of days, you know, we're going out searching and all this. And our interpreter, he had a radio and he kept hearing the Taliban saying, we can see the Americans leave their compound and coming back in. So what these guys were doing, they were getting up early in the morning, come up on these mountains and watch us. So, you know, we had this young lieutenant, you know, God bless him, he's a great guy. But if you ever seen We Were Soldiers, the movie, remember that lieutenant that ran, trying to run glory? He's like him. Never been in a firefight, never been into anything. So always wanted to, you know, get into something. You know, this guy was so crazy, he stood right next to an IED and said, take a picture. I'm like, I'm not taking a picture. You take a picture. You know, that thing blows up. You blow up with it. I'm not going to be with you. But so his plan was, you know what? We're going to split the scout team in two. One half's going to go up on the mountain in the afternoon, stay up there overnight, and the other team, my team, is going to stay overwatch. So that's what we did for a couple of days. Nothing really happened. Nothing, you know, we can really, you know, attack. You know, if that, of course, that time it was, you know, overnight it was 2 hours up, 1 hour sleep, 2 hours up, 1 hour sleep, just rotating out with three-man team. So it was a couple of days, nothing happened. So the lieutenant said, hey, let's go hit the town, search to see if anything's going on. So we did. We hit the town, nothing. And then the young PL sees a guy up the mountain, and he just jumps in the Humvee and takes, you know, says, ZT, come on, come with me, and tells the other two guys to get in the other Humvee and follow us. And he takes off. He's trying to get behind this mountain, sneak up on this guy. And we actually do. We get behind the mountain, and he points at me and the interpreter. He's like, ZT, I want you to come with me, and I want the interpreter to come. I'm like, okay, so you want me to come with you? You're a brand new lieutenant, never seen him in action, and you want an interpreter that has no weapon. like, yeah. He's like, oh boy, I'm going to die up here. It's like, okay, sir, let's go. So here we go. We're hiking up this mountain. And we actually get behind him, literally right behind him, just like 100 meters up above him. And, you know, I'm an expert marksman. I had the scope. And I told him, hey, sir, you want me to shoot him? I got him eyes on. He's like, no. I want to capture him. I'm thinking in my head, sir, you don't know these people. They're like goats out there. They could be in flip-flops, and they run up these mountains like goats. They're like, bing, bing, bing. I was like, whoa. Well, by the time we got to this guy, he's gone. He saw us, and he took off. By this time, our second half of the team that was up on the mountain starts radioing, hey, we're running low on supplies, and we need help. Or come resupply us, you know, so we can continue on with the mission. So we do that. We just finished eating lunch, my side, and we're on our way to go meet the other guys. And that's where I sometimes tailor switch a lot towards younger enlisted and officers. I let them know, you know, be aware of your surroundings. You know, if your job is to watch that right side or left side of the Humvee or left side or right side of the road and a patrol, do it. You know, don't be reading a book. Don't be falling asleep. Don't be playing a crossword puzzle because, yeah, you may be Air Force, you may be Army, you may be Marines, maybe Navy, but when you're all out there, you're all brothers. Doesn't matter what kind of branch, you're all U.S. military out there. So you watch out for each other. So, you know, if you're not doing your job, you're not just screwing yourself, you're screwing your buddy. So, you know, I always did that. And I tell them, be aware. Be aware of your surroundings, you know, what's going on, what's up on the mountains, what are you crossing and all that. And I always did that. And as we're going back to meet up with the second half of the team, we crossed this creek, and no more than 200 meters after we crossed the creek, and that's when I feel this heat blast all on my left side. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to die. It's like, and people say, you think of your life flash in front of you, and it's true. I thought of my little boy, I thought of my wife, I thought of the trips that I was supposed to take them after we get back from Afghanistan. You know, we're going to go to Europe. And it all flashed in my head. But it was just instinct for me to get out of the Humvee. And like I said, I was aware. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't playing the puzzle. I knew there was a creek right behind me. I was like, I just got to get to it and I'll be okay. Then unfortunately, I was covered from head to toe. I was like a Christmas tree, just lit on fire. So I collapsed. And I thought I was going to die there. I literally did. I was like, my God, I'm going to die. I'm never going to see my wife again. I'm never going to see my little boy. I'm not going to be able to teach my boy how to be a pimp. I got you. You're all serious. I always do that. I can never be serious. But I did think, you know, I did think I was going to die. And I must have yelled out that I was going to die because that's when the lieutenant yells out, no, you're not DT. And throw some dirt on me and help me get up. And we both jump into the creek. And the same sound, what I heard was the same sound when you put a hot pan in water. That sizzle sound. And I'm laying there and I look at the lieutenant. And I'm like, sir? He's like, yeah. That sucked. And he's like, are you being funny, DT? He's like, no, dude, I just got blown up and I was on fire and it sucked. And I don't know why I said that, but I said that. I just looked at him and said, that sucked. But my mission didn't stop there because it was a planned ambush. Because as soon as we got hit, my second half of my team that was up on the mountain got caught in a crossfire. So I was the JTAC. I was the only fire support they had. So unfortunately, you know, I just got blown into a Humvee. My radios were destroyed. The backup radios were in the Humvee that got destroyed. So all I was able to do was get an embedder from an Army guy. And again, this is where I tailor with a lot of young troops. You know, before you deploy, you get these spins, SOPs. They tell you a lot of information, a lot of code words, things that just in case might happen, you're prepared. Like if you have to transmit in the red, which means not secure, and get aircraft in, and so they know who you are, you got these code words. So, you know, I did read them. So I was able to do that, and I had the Army guy do it because, you know, my fingers were hurting by that time. And so he was doing the switching, and he was able to get aircraft, and they came back, hey, tell Gunslinger 3-2 he has two A-10s and Harriers. Well, that was my call sign. They're like, Gunslinger 3-2's hit. So my buddy from FOB Lagman had to control the aircraft through UAV. By that time, you know, my body was shutting down. You know, I was a certified EMT. Besides being in the military, on the civilian side, I volunteered. And, you know, I just got blown up. I jumped in a freezing cold creek in the middle of December in the mountains in Afghanistan. You know, I knew my body shutting down. And I told these guys, like, dude, you know, I'm tired. I just want to go to bed. You know, most likely, if you fall asleep out there, you're not going to wake up. And again, you know, this is where the whole family thing comes. When you're out there with your buddies, you have downtime to talk to your buddies, you know, about your family, your wives, your mistresses, whatever you have, you know, whatever floats your boat. But, you know, they know everything about you, you know, just to keep you up. And they tried that. They're like, DT, you got to fight, you got to fight. I'm like, man, I just want to sleep. They're like, you know, you got to fight for your wife. And I'm like, you got to try harder than that. That's not going to work, dude. But no, I'm just kidding. I didn't say that. Again, thank God my wife ain't here because, you know, I probably wouldn't be married anymore. But they were like, fight for your son, fight for your son. I was like, okay, I'll fight for my son, I'll fight for our son. And God's honest truth, I'm not joking about this one. My friend, and I even asked him, he came to visit me later on, you know, in the hospital. He tells me, fight for your son, she can be a pimp. And I'm in my head, I'm laying there. And did he just say what he just said? And he says it again, fight for your son, you can be a pimp. Okay, I fight for my son so I can be a pimp. Yell it. I fight for my son so he can be a pimp. And he makes me do it like 5 times. And it's just bad for my hands. Like, and I asked him, dude, why'd you say that? I don't know, man. That was the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, well, it worked. You kept me up. And I ain't go to bed. So, you know, they kept me up. The helicopter came in. I got on it. I remember the flight. I remember landing. I remember getting into the little makeshift ambulance. And I remember arriving in the little makeshift hospital, field hospital we had there at Lagman. And I remember seeing all my Army buddies that was back at the FOB and the rest of my Air Force Tech P team that was there. And I remember the doctor cutting off my watch. And the last thing I remember is her telling me, you're going to be okay. And that was December 4th of 05. I wake up March of 06 in San Antonio. So 4 months, I had no idea what happened. And it was weird. It's so weird not knowing what happened in 4 months. And I try to remember. Sometimes I'm not sure if it's a memory because I was hallucinating big time, too. They gave me some good drugs. I would hallucinate entire weekends. And then, you know, nurses got so used to me hallucinating, they would say, DT, you're hallucinating. And it was like you were hearing God in the background. And I'm like, what? You're hallucinating, DT? And I closed my eyes, and I'm like, dude, I was in Hooters, and you just woke me up, and I'm here in the hospital. But no, it really hit it. I had just dreams like that. It was crazy. I had some dreams that I thought I was back in Afghanistan doing my mission. But those 4 months when I was out, you know, my family always didn't like the military. You know, after my first enlistment, my family on my dad's side tried to buy me out. You know, my family on my dad's side is quite well off, and they're like, just don't resign, you know. Come work in the company. You don't have to do anything. You'll be, you know, set for life. Like, not me. My dad wasn't that way. Now that's not me. So, but they realize, you know, why I love being in the military, you know. I tell a lot of people, you know, I did the private sector before I joined the military. I know how it is. You know, yeah, you're going to say, I can't wait to get out. I can't wait to get out. But, you know, when things like this happen, you know, the private sector might come visit you maybe 2 times a week. And that's it. Never hear from them. I had friends from all over the world visit me. Korea, Italy, Germany, Japan, every part of the U.S. I still have my Italian buddies, you know, my teammates come twice a year to visit me. You know, and my wife noticed that because when she got called, I always kind of prepped her. I told her, honey, if you get a phone call, you know, it's not too bad, but it's not good. But if you see one of my buddies or my commander walking up to the door, you know, I'm not with you anymore. I'm with my parents. So she knew, you know, when she got the phone call, something was up. Well, she got the phone call on December 5th, which was her birthday. So, you know, that was a real nice happy birthday. Doesn't let me forget it, you know. But she was so thankful because, you know, at the time my wife went back. She didn't stay in Italy. You know, a lot of the wife went back to the States. So she wanted to go back with her family. Her family's from Mexico. So she went back there. You know, unfortunately, her visa had run out. And so when she got the phone call, she told him, it's like, you know, because we moved around so much, her residency got lost. So by the time, you know, she got it, you know, we were somewhere else, so they had to try and ship it the other way. And, you know how the government works. But, you know, I'm not talking bad. I love the government. I work for the government, you know. They still pay my check, you know. But she let my commander know, and my Flo, which was Chief Humphreys, great guy, great dude, love that dude. They told him, you know, she's like, when's he get into San Antonio? She said, and they told her, by December 7th, he'll be in San Antonio. And she told him, I want to be there. What I got to do? Can you help? You know, and they did. But I arrived December 7th in the morning, and she was in the state by December afternoon. So in the matter of 2 days, they were able to, you know, clear everything up, you know, tell him, hey, her husband, the military member, got hurt in Afghanistan. She has to be there with him. And she was. She got there, but unfortunately, you know, I was the type of guy that I want to take care of everything. I took care of the finances. You know, I just wanted my wife to look pretty and cook for me. And, you know, being a trophy wife, you know, just hang there in the mantle, you know. It's like, that's my wife there. And I screwed up there because she, you know, they couldn't find our power attorney. They couldn't find the will. So my wife was screwed. She couldn't get into any of the finances. So again, that's where the Air Force stepped in, and that's where my friend stepped in. You know, never left her side. The flows, the family liaison officers were incredible. There were three times they called my wife, said, you better get here because he's not going to live. All three times. The three main flows were Chief Humphreys, Chief Gonzalez, and Chief Page. All three times, those guys were right there with her. They told her I had a 20-30% chance of living. But my wife knew me. She said, he's going to live. And they're like, how do you know? Because he's too stubborn. He ain't going to die. And I did, and I fought. When I finally did wake up, you know, I woke up, and I'm like, it's like, they're like, where are you? I'm like, Afghanistan? They're like, no, you're in San Antonio. It's like, you know what day it is? I'm like, December something? It's like, what year? 05? No, it's March 06. I'm like, oh, crap. And, you know, it's just so weird. And they tell me when I woke up, like, DT, you know, at that time, of course, I had a trach. I couldn't talk. I had to read my lips. They're like, you may not be able to walk again. And you might be stuck in this hospital for another year and a half. And, you know, I couldn't talk. So they read my lips, and I was like, you know, screw you. I'm going to get out of this. Ho-ho. Exact same word I told them. And by April, I was out of the ICU. And by May, I was out of the hospital and walking. You know, my entire motivation, you know, was my little boy. You know, because my son couldn't see me. You know, he was only, at the time, 3 years old. And they don't even let until they're like 14 into the hospital. So I just wanted to see him, you know. Of course, my wife tried to play his voice. I was like, no, I don't want to hear it. You know, it upset me. I just want to see him. So, you know, my son was part of my motivation, but also it was this one guy, Kevin. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I had times that I was depressed. I was like, you know, you're talking to a guy that was, you know, 200 pounds of muscle reduced to 120 pounds of skin and bone. So I kind of look like an officer, you know. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, sir. You know. Much love, much love. Don't tell General Mosley, please. But, there's this guy, Kevin, and he had lost both of his legs, his arm. His fiancée never came to see him. She left him. and he had no family. But this dude always was giggling, always was laughing. He was out there in the hallway. And when I was trying to learn how to walk again, he would try and trip me. And I'm like, you little bastard, you just wait till I start walking. I'm going to kick over that wheelchair, and then we're going to see who's laughing. But, you know, I thought of this guy. I was like, you know what? This guy has it so much worse than I do. But he's happy. He's cheery. You know, I was like, you know what? If that dude can do it, I can do it. And I did. You know, I pushed myself. You know, sometimes it was some painful days. You know, it was. You know, it's crazy thinking, you know, after 4 months, you don't know how to walk. I couldn't believe it. You know, until I tried to take my first step, and I was like, grr. You know, they helped me up. It was just unreal. So I pushed. You know, a lot of times, a lot of people ask me, DT, what was probably the, you know, best thing you were able to do when you were able to do your own thing? It's like, dude, it was being able to wipe my own butt. That's the best thing. That was. Because when you're in the hospital, your all modesty is gone. You know, everyone sees you naked. You know, you got people cleaning you. You're like a little baby, which wasn't too bad. I'm like, can I have a bottle too? But, you know, so I used to mess with the nurses too. You know, when they came and give me baths, I'm like, oh, that's a good spot there. Rub it some more. Or, you know, they'll come in, I'll have my legs up. And, you know, of course, there's nothing underneath the gown. So it's like, DT, you're not right. You know, like I said, tack peas, we're just not right in the head. You know, we're out there. You know, you got to be a little crazy. You know, maybe it was my mom when she was smoking weed when I was big. I don't know. You know? I'm just kidding. But, you know, I got out in May. And it was funny because a lot of my friends, you know, came to visit me. And they're like calling me up and like, DT, do you remember when I came to visit you? I'm like, when'd you come? January. I was like, dude, I don't remember crap from December to March. If you showed up in March, we can talk. You could have, you know, poked me in the head and I wouldn't even known. But, you know, there was one special person that did come visit me. And, you know, I kind of, you know, get a little shorthand with people when I do hear them talk bad about them. And it was the president. You know, when you're severely burned as I was 80%. You know, they shred you. You know, like they skin you. They got to take all this bad skin off you. And you're laying in a room at 98 degrees. And anyone that comes visit you has to be completely covered from head to toe. And when the president came, this is what my family and a couple of friends told me. He stayed in my room for 20 or 30 minutes just sitting there talking to me. So, you know, I tell people, you know, you may not agree with the president's policies, but don't ever accuse him of not caring for his guys, because he does. He cares for us a lot. And, you know, so, and to this day, you know, I've still been trying to just go up to him and say, thank you. Thanks for being there. Hopefully the general can do, you know, make that happen, you know, little poke, you know, so come on, you know. But, you know, so like I said, you know, you may not agree with him, it's possible. Don't ever accuse him of not caring about his people, because he does. He really does. And that's my little soapbox. I'll get off that. But besides that, you know, like I said, a lot of friends came all over. And it was funny, you know, my wife tells me, it's like, you know, I ask her, it's like, you know, about my friends who came to visit me. You know, she's like, isn't your career field mostly men? I'm like, yeah. How come there are more women visiting you than guys? It's like, honey, you know what you married, you know? You know, tag piece, good looking, you know, muscle bound, you know? No, I'm just kidding. But she did ask me that, you know. There were a lot of fun. It's like, honey, they were before your time. Friends, that's it, friends. But, you know, when I got out in the hospital, they told me, hey, DT, we're going to present you your Purple Heart. I'm like, oh, cool. It's like, who's going to do it? I'm thinking one of my old commanders, you know, but like General Mosley. I'm like, who the hell's that dude? And they're like, that's Chief of Staff of the Air Force. I'm like, oh, don't tell him I said that. You know, and they told me, it's like, DT, you know, we know you can't walk that well. You know, it still hurts you to walk. You know, but if you can't, you know, we'll wheelchair you down to the podium and have someone help you up and keep you up as you're getting pinned. I was like, the hell with that, dude. I was like, that's not going to happen. I was like, I'm going to walk down that aisle. stand up right next to that general, you know, turn to him, stand in perfect attention, and have him pin me like a true soldier should be pinned, with honor and discipline. And I did, and that's what I did. It hurt, but I was going to do it. And that was probably the best feeling, because, you know, I had friends. You know, it was a stadium arena about this size, and it was packed, from friends from Bragg that got in a C-130 and flew down, to A-10 guys that flew from DM to be there, to friends that drove down from Washington, drove down from Carson, Colorado. You know, even friends that had retired were there. And that was awesome. And, you know, my wife loved it. She was like, I can understand why you love being in the military. And from then, you know, I go to therapy every single day, 5 days a week, I mean, Monday through Friday, from 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. And some of the times it's some of the most painful pain I have to go through, you know, getting stretched again, you know. Because when you burn, your skin contracts. So they got to stretch that skin, and it hurts, you know, your joints hurt, you know. Long time I couldn't even, you know, ride a bike. All I could do was just push the pedal at 1 foot at a time to, you know, to now being able to pedal. And I just push myself because I have to, you know. I have a little boy, you know. I don't want him to see his dad as someone that failed, you know. My dad didn't raise me that way, and I'm not going to raise my son that way. So, you know, I push myself every single day, and it may suck, but I have to. You know, I'm at 96 surgeries right now, in a matter of 2.5 years. And, you know, and I'll go through 96 more if I have to get to the point where I want to be. You know, because I do want to stay in. Jerry Mosley knows that. Chief McKinley knows that. You know, I know I may not be an operator. You know, unless we become like Star Wars and I get those cool Luke Skywalker hands, you know. That's not going to happen. So I can be a trainer. My mind's still there. I may be a little nuts, but, you know, my mind's still there. I can still train. So if I can do that, that's cool. And the Air Force is letting me do that. They're letting me to get all my surgeries done to give me the best chance that I want to, you know, so I can stay in. And in the meantime, you know, when I got given my Purple Heart, General Mosley asked me, DT, will you go speak to airmen about, you know, what's happening to you? I'm like, it's like, what are you talking about, sir? It's like, you don't talk about your experience. Like, sir, I'm just a regular airman, you know, just like any other guy. It's like, no, you're not DT. It's like, I'm like, why, sir? It's like, they gave you a 20-30% chance of living. They told your wife 3 times you're going to die. They told you you're going to be stuck in the hospital for a year, year and a half. They told you may not be able to walk again. They told you you were going to have to be wheeled down and given your Purple Heart in a wheelchair. And where you're at now, you're standing right in front of me out of the hospital and walking. And if that's not a story to tell, then I don't know what is. And I was like, all right, sir, I guess I can do that for you. You know, you kind of outrank me, so whatever you say, dude. I'm all over that, sir. So I do that, you know. My first speaking engagement was when Chief Gonzalez, well, at the time when I got hurt, he was a senior master sergeant Gonzalez. He wanted me to pin him. And afterwards, you know, speak in front of his airmen. And I told him, you want me to hit you when I pin you? He's like, yeah. You know, he must have thought, you know, DT's all, he's all hurt. He can't hit. He can't punch. Well, I give him the old elbow. And knocked him into almost General P. But after that, you know, it started out with just 20 people, and it seems like my crowd keeps getting bigger and bigger. I'm like, dude. And people ask me, it's like, DT, do you get nervous? It's like, man, I just picture everyone naked in front of me, so that gets me better. So right now, you're naked in front of my eyes right now. I see the thong back there. I got you. But you know, I do this, you know. You know, if my story is able to help, you know, an airman, if he has to go through what I went through, or a soldier, marine, I do it. You know, besides therapy and besides speaking, you know, I'll go visit the burn ward, and I tell guys, it's like, dude, I was there once before. I was there hurting, you know. And I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah, it sucks. What's not going to suck? It's like, you know, you used to be able to run, and now you're stuck in a bed and can't even take care of yourself. But you'll pull through. You know, I did, and you can. And so that's what I do, you know. And in the meantime, you know, I've done this. And I don't do it for any rewards. I don't do it for any glory. That's just not me. You know, there's other people can tell you war stories and gun battles, but that's just not me. You know, I've done my job, and I'll do it again if I have to. And sometimes you kind of do get rewarded. You know, there's a story I like to tell is, you know, one of my biggest fears, like, I was going to get medically discharged and never get to have made E6. You know, I never was going to be able to get to test. So, and General Mosley knew this, and a lot of other people knew this. Well, there's this one day, Chief Page, the command chief up at Randolph, and General Looney, they tell me, DT, you got to get in your blues. We're going to recognize Sergeant Hudson. She was another sergeant that helped my wife a lot. We're going to give her this award for what she did. I'm like, man, I hate wearing my blues, dude. I don't want to wear my blues. They're like, you have to. I was like, you just wait. I want to tell General Mosley. I got his number. And they're like, go ahead, call him. So I was like, fine, I wear my blues. Well, you know, they get me my blues. They get me to up to Randolph, up in the Taj. And they're saying, Olga's not here. Well, Olga was really General Mosley code name. So they kept saying, Olga's not here, Olga's not here. I was like, I'm going to kill Olga. Yeah. And I'm in my blues, and I'm sitting here waiting for her. So I'm going to kill her. So they're like, finally said, oh, Olga's here. I'm like, oh, great. So I walk into the conference room, and I see General Mosley. And I'm like, oh, you know, he's probably here to, you know, give Olga her gift. And I go up to him, and I give him a hug, and say, hey, sir, how you doing? And he holds me on the side and says, and turns to DT, I got a surprise for you. And you know, I'm thinking, okay, what you guys do? I was like, you give me a plaque or something, what? And he, all of a sudden I see this master sergeant in his blues with tech stripes, and I'm just speechless. And all the, you know, Chief Humphreys, Chief Page, all these friends of mine there are just laughing because I was pretty good at sniffing things out, and I didn't know that. Well, they kind of couldn't let it out because General Mosley put down the fear of God if I found out. Because, you know, technically I was promoted January 29th, but General Mosley wanted to do it himself, and he wasn't going to be able to get there until the 22nd of February. So he told everyone, if DT found out, heads are going to roll. So they kept it tight-lit, and I gave him props. I'm like, man, you guys kept it pretty quiet, man, because I didn't know anything. So, you know, I see these stripes, I'm like, and I just want to jump on General Mosley and give him a big old monkey hug. But I didn't. I resisted. I was like, that might not be professional, but I really want to do it. So I just like, thanks, sir. And I'm just speechless. And everyone's just laughing. And I'm like, wow, I just got step promoted. And he's like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, okay, I didn't test. I was like, how else did I get step promoted? Like, the only thing that I remember, the only last thing is field promotion. She's like, yep. I was like, are you talking about when World War II, when guys were dying, like, boom, you're a lieutenant? He's like, yeah. Then, sir, why'd you stop at tech sergeant? That could have been a great colonel. I was like, oh, I'm perfect for that colonel. I was like, I'm kind of getting to, you know, getting the belly, you know, I'll be a great colonel. I'm just kidding. But, no. But, you know, it was pretty cool because I kept asking other people around. It's like, has that ever happened? They're like, no, I never heard of it. I was like, cool, I'm going to be a PFE question one day. So any people out there in the Air Force, remember, Sergeant Del Toro, that might be a PFE question. So that was probably my best surprise. You know, a lot of people ask me, DT, do you ever wish you died? And I never did. Not even when I woke up, not even when I wasn't able to, you know, move my arms, not even when I was able to walk. You know, I never wished for that. There was one time, though, and it was the first time I saw my face. When you're severely burned, they they try and hide your face from you. They want you to ease into it. And it was sometime in April of 06 when they were taking me to the bathroom. And I don't know if it was my wife or my therapist. And one of them fell, and I saw my face. And I broke down. And it wasn't for vanity or anything like that. It was because of that little three-year-old. I was like, my God, if I thought I was a monster, what's that little three-year-old thinking? And, you know, I broke down, and I did. I wish I would have died. I told him, God, why don't you guys just pull out the IVs? Let me die. If I look like that, my son's going to be scared. Because, you know, that's every man's biggest fear is something afraid of him. So my therapist, you know, it seems like every injured guy has his Rosie, his therapist that takes care of him from day one. And Gary was my Rosie. And he sat there next to me and cried. And he says, Matthew T, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for letting you see your face. It's like, trust me, your son's going to love you. He's going to not be afraid of you. And the day when I finally saw my son, I was terrified. I was like, please don't let him run away from me. He came right up to me, gave me a hug. And that was the best feeling I ever had. Even better when he was born, I was like, sweet, my son loves me. I can still teach him to be a pimp. But you know, it was great, you know. That was the best feeling. And like I said, that's my entire motivation. And that's what I do. I push on every single day. And before I leave you guys, so you can ask a question, you know, I'm a big sports fanatic. I've always been, you know. I've collected baseball cards when I was a little kid. I got Mickey Mantle's autograph, Ted Williams, you know. And there's a saying that I found. I'm not going to tell you who said it. I kind of rearranged it in my words to help me out. And it goes something like this. It's a lot of you out there might think I've gotten a bad break, but I have honored to have worked with some of the greatest men out there. I have a wife that is a pillar of my strength, a son that is the spirit of my life. And yeah, I might have gotten a bad break, but I still got a lot to live for. Thank you.